JP? The day after the day before.
It feels good. I would say that the day after the trade deadline for those of us in the baseball reporting business is sort of like the last day after, or the first day after your last final exam in university. That's how it feels right now. But it was a busy day, a good day. They had the surprise late there with the Greinke trade by the Astros, and it was an active deadline. I know maybe not quite the amount of prospect value that the Jays fans were hoping that would be coming back to Toronto, but certainly it has given us plenty to discuss this morning.
Did the deadline, John, go as you anticipated, given that this is the first year that there is no possibility of a waiver trade through August?
Scott, that's a good question. I think the answer is yes. There were a lot of trades yesterday, much more so as one of the more active July 31st that we have seen in years. So I think by that measure, it was good. It was active. There was a lot that happened, and there were some trades. I know the Shane Green deal, for example, basically the Tigers and Braves had not even discussed it until yesterday. The Greinke deal, according to what Jeff Luhnow has said, was discussed only in the final 48 hours before the deadline. So you had a lot of things that happened right at the deadline, and I think at the end of the day, there was greater urgency by those clubs to get deals done, because there's no waiver trades this week, in this month. You have to get it all done by July 31st, and maybe that's the one surprise that I had, that the two iconic large market teams did not make a big splash. The Yankees were quiet. The Dodgers were largely quiet. So I think that was maybe the one big surprise of the deadline. But in general, I think that the buyers probably did better than the sellers. I think that there was the expectation that maybe there'd be some desperation on the part of the buyers at the very end to really up their offers and start giving away A-level prospects. And that simply just was not the case. The market did not bear that out, and I think that was probably part of the frustration for the Jays and other rebuilding teams, that they made the trades they felt they had to make, but they probably did not get back the value they expected in terms of top 100 prospects. So there were very few of those types of guys that moved at all in any deals yesterday.
That's very much the way that we feel sitting here in Toronto today. It's just the buyers did better than the sellers, and being that the Jays were sellers, that's obviously not a great thing. So just wondering if we get your overall look at the Blue Jays from the past couple days. How do you think they've done with the acquisitions they've made, given what they gave up?
Well, I think we have to grade them on a curve, as we established that it wasn't a great time to be trading veterans. They did okay, but I think that's probably the high end of how they did. I think that there are probably going to be some that are frustrated by how they proceeded. And I would say this in general, that the Derek Fisher return, for example, and maybe they've wanted him for a while. I understand that, and maybe he'll be able to, with everyday at bats and more of a sustained opportunity, play better than he has in Houston. But it interests me that the Jays' philosophy, and this goes back to the Hap deal last year, that when they bring in McKinney and Drury, and then this year with getting Fisher in that deal and really giving up three players for one. They're taking players who are somewhat known commodities, whose value is maybe down a little bit from where it was at its peak, and you're hoping that they make themselves into solid major leaguers, basically, I think is how they're looking at it. Whereas I think there are some, in terms of the scouting acumen and the scouting approach of listen, when you're going to make this trade, go down to the Dominican Summer League, go down to the Gulf Coast League and find two or three arms or players in general where you've got a lot of exciting tools. Maybe there's not quite the same certainty of what their production is going to be, but get that lottery ticket, if you will, or just get the buy on some upside down there and get a little bit of less certainty and hope that you get someone that really clicks. And I think it's a different philosophy than what the Jays have. The Jays seem to like the known commodity who's rather close to the major leagues. And I just think in this day and age, given where we're at as an industry, given the fact that the players, by the time they get to be at the upper minors, there's such a reluctance to give them up. I would advocate to try to find the next Yordan Alvarez, who was basically a Gulf Coast League player at the time the Astros got him from the Dodgers for Josh Fields. He was a flyer, but it was an educated flyer, and I was just a little surprised that the Jays, given where they're at right now, didn't take more of those risks, especially on the pitching side, because they just need to get better pitching, and I'm not sure that they did that here at this year's deadline.
So, I mean, maybe this is not an entirely accurate comparison, JP, trying to find a Bautista or an Encarnacion.
Yeah,
just to relate it to the the history here.
Sure, that's exactly right. And Bautista, I think both Bautista and Edwin were that's kind of what they're trying to do. And again, perhaps it works, and it did in the case of Bautista, basically a waiver claim, and Edwin was part of the Roland deal, and he was a known commodity who kind of stalled out in Cincinnati. So it's, you're right, they're taking that approach of they're looking for the next Bautista or Encarnacion, whereas I tend to think that now the better play may well be to try to look for the next Alvarez, or certainly it's, you know, Fernando Tatis Jr. was a little bit of a better known commodity at the time, but he was obtained for James Shields by the Padres. So there's precedent out there to go to the lower levels, the guys that have just been signed, and really mine those teams and get a little bit more upside and a little more excitement, because I think that the projection for a lot of the Jays prospects the last couple years is, I think player X has a chance to be a solid major leaguer, and I'm just not sure if that's the best approach to take. And again, I think they did fine to get Johnston for Hudson. I think that was an acceptable return for him, given it was a reliever for a half season, and that seems to be how relievers are priced nowadays. But I just think in general, upside and buying a little bit of tools might be the better approach right now for the Jays.
John Palmarossi is an insider for MLB Network. This is Sportsnet Today, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Were there any guys the Jays got who, you could take this one of two directions. Were there any guys that the Jays got who you thought, I'm higher on this guy than others? Or was there someone from any of the teams that the Jays dealt with where you said, how didn't they get this guy?
I think in general, you know, Johnston to me might be one of the more intriguing guys there. Just you think about his path and pitching at Texas. I mean, he's a relatively advanced college pitcher. Of course, he was drafted 2 years ago. The strikeouts for him are there. In his last outing, actually, he struck out 8 over 7 innings. That's a pretty good sign. I realize he's still basically at the high A level. But I think Johnston probably is the guy that I like the best of those that they got. And I think you look over the weekend and you know, Kay, I know he didn't have a great first outing as a Blue Jay in the system. Now that's maybe not maybe not the best sign. Of course, you don't want to overrate one start. But this is where I think in this day and age, guys, it's really interesting, because with all the fixation that we've got on prospects, and especially for, you know, a franchise like the Jays and their fans now that are really hoping to see some positive signs in every single start, you've got to be right. And I think that when you bring in players for an established known guy like Stroman, you know, Kay and Woods Richardson, they're always going to be known as, okay, we got these guys for Stroman. How are they doing? And every single time they take them on, there's going to be that context around who they are, at least from a fan perspective. It shouldn't be from the player's perspective, but the fans, I think, probably look at it that way. So I think that it's a lot of responsibility to put on somebody. And again, I think that with Stroman in particular, as we look at the big picture here, you do wonder if they could have gotten more if they'd waited. And that's the one thing that, you know, it's an unknowable for us, because we don't always know every market price and every offer that's made. I just wonder why he was traded for that return that far in advance of the deadline. It's impossible for us to know if they could have done better. I think they probably could have done better, but I was a little surprised that they made that move as far in advance of the deadline as they did, and certainly they had to do so believing a lot in Kay and Woods Richardson to believe that they've got a chance to make that deal look pretty good at the end of the day.
JP, how is the Blue Jays front office perceived around the rest of Major League Baseball? Because right now here in Toronto, it feels like, you know, maybe they're outsmarting themselves, maybe they're inauthentic, but at the same time, it feels like they're building something that is growing and moving in the right direction.
Well, they are, and I think that the latter part, and they are building something really good. I think you look at their group of position players, and it's hard to argue with the results, I think, so far of Vlad being ready and Bichette, a very good first series for him, and Biggio, I think, looks like a very solid, versatile player. Gurriel, I think the way they've handled his situation is really good. I mean, this is, basically we saw he had a hard time throwing the ball, and all of a sudden, okay, what do you do with a player that you believe can hit, but you can't throw the ball across the diamond accurately right now? What do you do with him? And you put him in left field and he's taken off. So, I mean, there have been a lot of successes, I think, with the Jays this year that we can't overlook. I mean, it's important to sort of accentuate those things. And I think certainly you look around the game and the Jays are able to make trades. I mean, Ross Adkins and Mark Shapiro have very good relationships with their peers around the sport. They're very well respected within the game. And part of the reason, of course, is there's a pretty good tree of executives that have come from sort of the Cleveland Indians University, if you will, and they're all over the place in the sport now. And so I think that helps facilitate conversations because Mark and Ross know so many people all around the sport. So I think that gives the Jays credibility. And I think in time that things will turn. But it's a difficult division to make headway in, and I think the Jays, it's no accident that the Jays, their up cycle when they were winning, synced up with when the Yankees had to have their bit of a downturn and they were rebuilding a little bit. The unknown here is, can the Jays find a way to win consistently and get back to the playoffs at a time when the Yankees and or the Red Sox are not flawed, when they are still going for it, and when they, as we're seeing all the Yankees' young talent, when they're at their full strength? That's going to be a very difficult task indeed for the Jays to manage. And, of course, the Rays remain as consistent as ever. So difficult task in the division, but I think in general we've seen some good developments, I think, with the farm system, the draft and develop guys. But I'm a little bit, I would say, underwhelmed on the overall trading of the front office the last couple trade deadlines.
With John Paul Morosi, insider at MLB Network. And to your point from a couple of comments ago, JP, about the Stroman situation, I just am going to pull from a paragraph of an article written by Dan Hayes in The Athletic, and he covers the Minnesota Twins. And this is what he says about the Blue Jays and Twins talks regarding Stroman. And I don't think I was alone in this, but I always felt like Minnesota was a possibility for Stroman because it was so clear to me that they needed a two behind Jose Berríos. Now, I wasn't big on Kyle Gibson, Martin Perez, etc. So here's the paragraph I'm going to read, and then we can get into it. Quote, Stroman was the first target, in brackets, of the Twins, and sources indicated the Twins were disappointed when Toronto didn't give them a chance to match an offer they believed they could have outdone. The Blue Jays were rebuffed when they originally asked the Twins for either of their top prospects, Royce Lewis or Alex Kirilloff, and never called back before accepting a deal for two New York Mets pitching prospects. And we know that that's SWR and Anthony Kay. End of paragraph. I'm not asking you to confirm or deny that. You've got your own information on all that has gone on here. But I mean, look, if this front office liked the return from the Mets more than they liked whatever was beneath Minnesota's top two prospects, then there's nothing to slag here. You make your own individual assessments. But I just always find it interesting when we read in the aftermath reports, and I'll underline that that's what this is, reports of how things may have or may not have, did or did not play out.
Yeah, it's very interesting, Scott, and I think that paragraph is concerning if I'm a Jays fan, because that it puzzles me. First of all, Derek Falvey, who runs the Twins, used to work for Mark Shapiro in Cleveland, so like they should have been able to have a conversation. That surprises me that did not transpire and that they didn't circle back. And this is where the Jays had better be right about the guys they got, because to me the Twins system, objectively, if you think about where we're at as the overall industry, the Twins system is better than the Mets system, period, full stop. It's just better. The top 10 prospects of the Twins system, if you polled prospect experts, and I'm not one, but I'm aware of the work of the prospect experts, they would tell you that the Twins system is better. And so I am surprised that they didn't hang with that conversation a little bit longer. I think the Twins probably would have been reluctant to give up, maybe even the third or fourth player down. But you got to at least circle back and see. I was of the mind the Twins should have, and I'll make clear this is my opinion, should have given up one of their one of the two outfielders to get Stroman, or at least Stroman plus, maybe Stroman plus Hudson, because they've got a young major league outfielder, as we know, Rosario and Buxton and Kepler. Kirilloff is an outfielder. They've got another good outfielder by the name of Trevor Larnach, who's a position player from Oregon State, really, really good bat. So they've got basically five young outfielders, including the two in the minor leagues. I would have said, yeah, you probably could have given up one of those guys as long as you got back Stroman plus, maybe Stroman plus Hudson, an arm in that way and constructed the deal that way. And so it just surprises me that there was not more of a sustained effort to make that happen and to really explore other alternatives. So I think Scott, that goes to the point that I think we're kind of mutually agreeing on, which is just, it would have made a little more sense to wait on that just a couple more days and see if they could get a little bit more from a team like the Twins, because in general, the Jays' return included some solid players, but when you trade some of the guys that have been really so key on your roster for so long, you want to get back people that you believe have a chance to be stars. And I don't know that was the case for the Blue Jays here at this year's trade deadline.
With John Paul Morosi, insider for MLB Network on Sportsnet today, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
John, I'm definitely with you on the why did they trade Stroman when they did question. That I'm still not sure of. But I think today there's a negative mood, at least within the fan base, and I think fans are willing to believe anything negative about the front office today. This is one thing where I don't think it passes the smell test. I'm going to call shenanigans here because it's weak language. They believed they could have outdone. I kind of feel like this is a bit of damage control from Minnesota, don't you?
Well, it certainly very likely could be when you think about where their perspective is. And again, it's a matter it's the old adage of when there's a conversation and if you debrief on either side, there often are two different interpretations of how how a conversation went down. And maybe the Jays say, hey, you're supposed to get back to us, and you never did. It's there kind of becomes a little bit of a finger pointing at the end of the trade deadline, which I've heard before, by the way, from either sides of an equation or a possible trade conversation. So I'm sure this is obviously the Minnesota version of the events, and I'd be curious to know what Ross or Mark would have to say about things. But the fact is, as you mentioned it, we do know that they traded Stroman 2 days or so, 3 days before they really had to, yeah. And you just wonder if they could have gotten a bit more by waiting. And I'm not sure what the rush was. They certainly wanted to move some inventory, clearly, and if you look at it that way, and clear some roster spots and get a little bit younger. And I will say in general that I'm not quite as enamored with the notion of, well, I've traded this number of years of control for this many years of control on the back end. It depends on who it is. And I need to know what their ceiling is. I mean, just the years of control are nice, but I need to know who it is, how good they're going to be, and the value there. So I think there was at various points in this process here, and this is, again, you look back and there's a pattern here. The Donaldson situation, I don't think that asset was managed very well either. There's an issue of timing here where it never seems like the Jays are trading their players at the right time. There's Bautista, there was never really much value there either by the time they parted ways. So it's an interesting dynamic here, but I think it fits with the larger narrative of timing not working out well. The Jays have done some things very well as a front office. They've developed these young position players very well, and they deserve an immense amount of credit for that. I want to make sure that they get their due for doing a lot of positive things in that regard. But the trading timing, I don't love some of the moves they've made, and just the timing of them all is a bit of a concern too.
Full scope, John, before we let you go, like Verlander, Cole, Greinke, I mean, that's just a murderer's row.
Yeah.
Now injuries can happen, etc., but all we can go off of is what we have now. We understand that sometimes teams get hot in the playoffs and they can bullpen you to death and win low scoring tight games. Nothing is guaranteed, but in your mind, is there a team close to challenging the Houston Astros to come out of the American League, or should the Astros get to the World Series to beat them in a seven-game series for all the marbles?
Yeah, I think the Astros right now, Scott, to your point, they're the best team in the American League right now. And you look at their rotation, and not just because of the rotation, but because of the lineup too, and Correa getting back healthy. They've got Brantley now with more balance on the left side. So I think for all those reasons, they are the clear favorites. You think about the World Series, and I would say that we're probably most people would project now an Astros-Dodgers World Series. I think that's kind of the conventional wisdom. Of course, there could be a lot of surprises and upsets. I look at the Yankees, and but I worry about their rotation depth there in New York right now. Minnesota, I thought they had to do more, and again, maybe they're wishing that they had Marcus Stroman right now. But I agree, it's hard to pick anybody but Houston right now in the American League. You consider how they'll have Greinke starting game three, probably Wade Miley in game four. And I certainly think, too, Brent Strom, their pitching coach, has a very good track record of quote-unquote fixing guys. And Sanchez, I still believe there is something there. I think in fairness to the Jays, it was also just time. I think he was going to move on, and it just was not probably going to work out in Toronto. But I think that there's a decent chance that Sanchez has a very good second half, and that maybe even he's part of the playoff staff there for them in a relief role, kind of reprising what you saw from him in Toronto 4 years ago. So they have a lot of depth right now. They did a very good job. And also, I'll make this point too, there is a certain subjective value of making a big deal, the way that your players respond. A.J. Hinch spoke to this yesterday. That's a very energized, very positive team right now in Houston, and I think we're going to see that momentum continue over the balance of the season, and I would expect well into October as well.